Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, we've been hearing about the possibility of a playoff quote-unquote bubble. It's not really that, but the two sides finalized that, reaching an agreement. Tuesday's announcement, according to the terms, will allow family members to join players as soon as the division series. They will need to quarantine for a week before then and take a charter to their division series site. Everyone inside the bubble will be tested daily, according to sources. The World Series would start October 20th at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas, and would end no later than October 28th. Major League Baseball still hopes to be allowed to have about 25% capacity for postseason games in Arlington. The American League will be playing its division series in Petco Park in San Diego and also in Dodger Stadium, and then League Championship Series would happen in Petco Park. The Giants and Mariners series that was supposed to start yesterday has been moved to San Francisco because of the fires and the air quality issues in Seattle. The two teams will play today and tomorrow in San Francisco. Really sad news out of the Braves organization, a ton of layoffs in baseball operations and other parts of the franchise. This sort of thing is happening all across baseball, even as baseball nears the end of the 60-game season and getting into the postseason and having access to revenue. Giancarlo Stanton was activated by the Yankees on Tuesday after the DH missed 32 games because of a strained left hamstring. The Yankees also activated third baseman Gio Urshela and right-hander Jonathan Loaisiga. In the Yankees game against the Blue Jays, they blew out Toronto.
The 7-hole, that one is driven to left field and deep. Going back, Gurriel, turning, looking, see ya! A long home run into the bleachers by Luke Voit. A three-run shot, and it is 6-1 Yankees.
Michael Kay on the YES Network. It was so out of control that the Blue Jays actually went to a position player to pitch in the bottom of the eighth, and this is what happened.
Why not? It counts in the scorebook. And D'Angelo Mayhew just went deep, Michael. I stole your thunder.
He did, and the Yankees have 20 on the board. It's 20-3 Bombers.
On a pitch at 48.7 miles per hour. The White Sox and the Twins and Byron Buxton did a Byron Buxton thing.
And the 1-0 pitch, a swing and a fly ball, left center field and deep. Robert going back on the track at the wall, jumps up and misses the ball and bangs into the wall. Byron's around second. Byron's going to make third, and Byron's going to head home. Byron to the plate. He will dive. He will score, and there's an inside the Parker. It's a 1-1 game. He came close last night. No controversy tonight. Inside the park homer for Buxton, and it's a 1-1 game in the third inning.
Corey Provis, Treasure Island Baseball Network. Yeah, Byron Buxton wasn't even running at full speed, and yet he made it easily around the bases. But the White Sox in this game would come back with help from Tim Anderson.
3-2, hit in the air left field side. Rosario going back, still going at the track, at the wall. Get the pasta ready, it's gone!
That's the second changeup in the at-bat, and the second one leaves the ballpark. I told you, Tim, on an off-speed pitch and a breaking ball in the zone, he is really tough, and if you throw one, you better not go there again.
Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on the White Sox television network. Tim Anderson at the end of the White Sox's 6-2 win over Minnesota, hitting .377. The White Sox now with in control of the American League Central with a three-game lead. Javier Baez has generally struggled this summer, but the Cubs saw the best of him last night. He hit a home run, and then there was the Javier Baez base running.
Probably why. Yeah. Just seen a lot of each other the last 2 days. 3-2 swing and a miss. Baez is safe. On to third he goes. And he's going to try to score. And he is going to score.
Of course he is.
Mago. Man, is he something else.
Who else tries it? Nobody. Look at Borzello. Look, he's sticking their head in there. I can't believe it.
Give him three stolen bases.
It's like a Little League home run.
Line Casper, Jim DeShays on the Cubs television network. Now, the Indians tied the game 5-5 in the top of the ninth inning when Francisco Lindor hit a home run. The Cubs had a couple of runners on base, and then this happened.
Here comes Cameron Maybin with the bases loaded. Whitgren home. Cubs win. Can you believe it? He hits back-to-back hitters. Cubs win the game 6-5.
What a crazy way to end a very good ball game. I guess that proves that his intent was not malicious with Contreras. He just had no command of that two-seam fastball. So a painful game-winning RBI for Cameron Maben.
A walk-off hit by pitch. By the way, on Sunday night, we're going to have the Twins against the Cubs in Wrigley Field. Yu Darvish will be on the mound for the Cubs, perhaps against Jose Berríos of the Twins. The Twins have not made that official. The Brewers and the Cardinals. And Keston Hira added to a Brewers onslaught.
This one, a shot to deep right center field. Back, gone! Keston Hira with an exclamation point in the fourth inning. It's a 7-run fourth. 3-run home run, Keston Hira. He has a dozen on the season.
That from 620 WTMJ. Now, in the midst of the Brewers' 18-3 win over the Cardinals, there was a bench clearing incident after Ryan Braun hit Yadier Molina on the wrist with a swing for a catcher's interference, only the third in Molina's entire career. Cardinals weren't happy about that. In San Diego, game two of that big series between the Dodgers and the Padres, the day beginning with San Diego a game and a half behind the Dodgers after winning that first game. There'd been a lot of conversation about Trent Grisham's home run swagger. On Tuesday night, Justin Turner was back in the lineup for the Dodgers after coming back from a hamstring issue. And this is what happened in his first plate appearance.
And an 0-1 pitch. Justin Turner lifts it to right. And it's down for a base hit. Betts is headed home. And the Dodgers have the game's first run.
Joe Davis on the Dodgers television network. Tony Gonsolin was excellent for the Dodgers. 7 innings, 1 run allowed. We talked on Monday and Tuesday about Cody Bellinger's offensive struggles. Well, he came through for the Dodgers last night.
3-1 pitch. Bellinger to right center field, base hit. Dodgers rally with 2 outs, 3 consecutive hits. Smith into third safely, and they lead it 2-0 on a Bellinger RBI single.
Kenley Jansen's had some ugly outings in the last couple weeks, but Dave Roberts went to him to protect a 3-1 lead. The Padres loaded the bases, and this is how it ended.
Dodgers 3, Padres 1, 2 out, bottom of the ninth inning. A 2-2 pitch from Jansen to Cronenworth. Kenley Jansen ekes his way out of this, and the Dodgers have tied the series at a game apiece.
The big fellow went to a well. The blooper to center field was a tough one to eat and a tough one to watch, but boy, did he come back and make a lot of good pitches to get him out of this jam and to record the win and the save.
Oral Hershiser with a commentary on the Dodgers television network at the end. We've got game three of that series on ESPN at 4 o'clock today. And that'll be followed by our broadcast of the Mets and the Phillies. Now, before we get to Carl Ravitch and Sarah Langs, today on ESPN Daily, for over 40 years, Major League Baseball umpire Joe West has worked behind the plate. He's a character that baseball fans and players love to hate. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code. and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
Yeah, and I know the Rabbit Train's going to be rolling through some kind of a ball game today, Carl, on ESPN. We got two broadcasts. Which one do you guys got?
Well, they're both great. I mean, I'm not going to particularly say ours is better than the other, but I love a Jacob DeGrom-Zach Wheeler matchup and a Phillies team fighting to get in the playoffs and a Mets team hanging on. So that's our game, and we are fired up for it with Eduardo Perez and Tim Kirkchin. That's tonight at 7, so that's a good one.
Yeah, and before that, the Dodgers and Padres are going to be on at 4 o'clock leading up to you guys, so it'll be a great day of baseball on ESPN. I know, you know, in your research that you do going into each start, you learn about players. What's really stuck out to you so far about Jacob DeGrom this year?
Well, I mean, we did a little Zoom call with him yesterday, you know, and there's this sort of common thread amongst certain pitchers. He, Kershaw, who have a hard time explaining their increase in velocity, and then you could theorize what it was that led to that. The biggest thing with him is his velocity is up a tick. Other than that, he's a Cy Young pitcher again. So there hasn't been a great deal of change. That's the one tangible change. He's the best pitcher in the National League for sure. So it would be the velocity. And then I think when you just go larger picture on the two teams, you know, the Mets' inability to hit with runners in scoring position, the Chirinos addition has kind of bumped Wilson Ramos into a part-time player. He's not used to that. So he's one of these, you know, 2020 guys who isn't playing every day, doesn't particularly now have a everyday position, and that's irritated him. You have the new ownership in New York that's going to be a conversation piece for us tonight. Didi Gregorius had a big home run last night. Joe Girardi and the managing of a bullpen that in spite of their efforts to improve it, hasn't been great at all. And then the National League conversation. So the answer with DeGrom is really an increase in velocity, but there's so much to talk about with the teams and certainly with the league. And you mentioned having the Padres and Dodgers play. There's a couple of great races, Buster, going on right now and matchups with the White Sox Twins and the Dodgers Padres. Really good. And not to mention our Mets Phillies game.
Yeah. And we'll get to the Dodgers and Padres in just a second. But you mentioned the Mets and the sale to Steve Cohen. If he were to call you up, Carl, and say, right, what advice do you have for me as I take over? What would you tell him in terms of what he needs to do moving forward? Would you be the guy who would say, hey, go in big on free agents? Like, I personally think JT Realmuto is going to be someone mm-hmm. who's going to benefit directly this winter from the fact that Steve Cohen has, is going to be the Mets owner. Or would you tell him, look what the Dodgers have done and focus on player development, focus on, you know, drafting the right guys and then making those big acquisitions when you see a good value buy?
Right. I would say the latter. And the first thing I would do if I were Steve Cohen would be to set up a meeting with Brian Cashman and say, Brian, you name your price, what you've done with the Yankees, how you know New York, you waited and you spent big money on Garrett Cole. Whether that works out or not doesn't matter to me. I collect art. I want you as an art piece in my collection. And then I want you to surround yourself in the gallery with great players when you think it's necessary for us to get great players. That would be the advice I would give Steve Cohen. I don't think anybody has navigated through Steinbrenner to younger Steinbrenner from we're all in on, you know, Reggie Jackson. We're all in on making sure we are competitive. We are aggressive and we're brash. And I think Cohen can be both of those. And I think there needs to be a voice of reason at the hull of the ship. And I don't think anybody has done this job better, given the circumstances of New York City and has the know-how, than Brian Cashman. That would be my advice to Steve Cohen.
That's pretty remarkable. It's funny. I wrote a piece that's going to be on .com today about all the people potentially affected by this. I did not put Brian Cashman on that list. I'm curious about your inspiration for that, because that's an interesting idea. And can you imagine the reaction in the media in New York if the Mets were to pry Brian Cashman away from the Yankees?
Yeah, Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's rooted in what I consider to be sound thinking, that that guy has done the job better than anybody. It's rooted in the idea that the Met fan and Met Nation is inspired by somebody who they believe is going to be willing to take on the New York Yankees and reclaim, you know, New York City as a Met town, or at least reclaim those Met fans and try to convince those that are baseball fans that the team in New York you should root for are the New York Mets. So that was the inspiration for it. And I can't think of a more brash, aggressive move than going across town and saying, Brian Cashman, we want you to run our team. You don't need to move. You can stay where you're at and go from there. So it was rooted in the logic, and it was rooted in the aggressive, brash, why wouldn't I try to take the best guy, especially if I can really, infuse more energy into my own fan base than getting the guy that's run the Yankees.
Brian Cashman's accountant loves your thinking, Carl, because
I'm sure Brian Cashman doesn't mind it either. He may say, look, I'm sure there's all sorts of ways that it can be talked about that there's great respect for, you know, whoever it might be that owns that team. But sure, I'm sure Brian Cashman wouldn't mind my way of thinking either, even if it drives the price up for the Yankees to retain him or keep him.
Right, exactly. All right, let's talk about the Dodgers last night. They punched back against the Padres. Some interesting things in this game. The return of Justin Turner to the Dodgers lineup off the injured list. He had a hamstring issue. Cody Bellinger, who in his last plate appearance on Sunday night looked a little bit better. Before that, looked completely lost. We talked about it on the podcast the last couple days. And Kenley Jansen again gets the ball in the ninth inning. My sense after we talked with Dave Roberts the other day was it was kind of an open process, and that he was going to be open-minded about what was to come. He put Kenley Jansen in that game last night. Runners are all over the bases, but he winds up getting a save. What jumped out at you about that game?
Well, you were on Baseball Tonight with us, and we had that conversation. Is this, and Teixeira certainly believed, like, we're into an audition period for the closer role. And given the number of games you're playing and back-to-back days, et cetera, I think the first move that he made was to give Kenley Jansen a chance. And, you know, the horrible outing on Saturday, you at least started to go down that path when things went sideways after Machado got a hit and there was a little bloop single. But, the one part about being a manager that I've really come to appreciate over the years of being involved with Major League Baseball, again, there is a trust factor that they need to have with the clubhouse and the player that the fan doesn't need to have. It's very easy for the baseball fan to say, oh God, we can't have Kenley Jansen come in. And, you know, we've heard all about the balance of the bullpen and clubhouse chemistry and culture. And I think the managers, are often asked to walk a really fine line in making sure that you don't blow up what has got you to where you're at. And they have, the best record in the National League, and their run differential is great, and they've won these games, with the knee-jerk reaction of the fan, which is, nope, can't be Kenley Jansen. We got all these great young arms. So I've come to appreciate that a lot. And I think, to the credit of the guys that have lasted in Major League Baseball, they pay attention to that. And, for Dave Roberts to, again, and I don't want to speak for or think for Dave Roberts, but if I were in the position of managing and have the wisdom and experience that someone like Dave has or other guys who've been in that position for a long time, when he comes out and says, I trust him with the baseball, again, there's a psychological component to all of this. And you need to continue to make sure that Kenley Jansen believes that I believe in him. So I'm saying those things, and whether inwardly I really do trust him with the baseball, I'm not going to let anybody know that. I'll do things that will allow me to, if I have that feeling of, trepidation, well, I'm going to have him pitch the eighth inning, and I'm going to try somebody else. Or he's going to have an off day, and whoever we try in the ninth inning and he goes 1-2-3 and he strikes out two, well, that's another opportunity in the next 10 days we might give that person. And to me, Buster, the other part of all of this, when you get into the playoffs, there is no, to me, there's no such thing as a closer on a team like this when you don't have 100% Mariano Rivera in his prime, Trevor Hoffman in his prime, Lee Smith in his prime guy. You'll see different people close games. I don't think Jansen has earned the right that Rivera did in his prime to be an automatic bullpen door open in the ninth inning, because we know how postseason baseball is. And you'll see Bueller, Kershaw, whoever come out of that bullpen when they need to end a game in a certain situation.
And that might especially be the case in this year's playoffs. And we'll get to that in a second when we talk about the bubble. But first, you saw Trent Grisham the other day, that massive home run off Clayton Kershaw, his reaction at home plate, stands at the plate, looks into his dugout. Yeah. Clayton Kershaw staring him down, the Dodgers yelling at him. Yesterday, I had a conversation with a longtime executive who you know, who said, you know what, for the Dodgers to do that, that was a mistake. Like, it was almost like they were acknowledging that the Padres were kind of in their heads a little bit by the fact that the dugout was chirping, that, you know, Dave Roberts after the game was critical of the actions in that moment. This executive was like, just move on. You're the Dodgers. You won the division all these years in a row. Who cares? It's a young player doing something that maybe you don't like, but you just move on. What was your take?
Well, to me, the Padres are the Oakland Raiders, and they're just the team that irritates. They're young, they're brash, they're enthusiastic, and they back it up by winning. And there's no question that beyond being young and brash, they have incredible talent, literal skill that I think irritates the other team more than the fact that they're young and brash. I think when you recognize, oh my gosh, not only are they bothering us with their actions, they're damn good. And we know it. And that to me is what gets in the head more than those things. If you knew that they weren't good, it wouldn't bother you. To me, it's an acknowledgement of, okay, here comes that team that we all know are going to push you around. They're going to chirp. They're going to irritate. And by the way, they're going to beat us every now and then, if not consistently challenge us. And that's what these Padres are doing now. And they're on that level. There's no doubt about it. To me, they are the Raiders, and they're going to have the Raider fans, because Padre Nation is pretty loud. And, you know, in a lot of ways, they're almost a less polished version of the Oakland A's, because the A's, yeah, I think, have a certain level of decorum now, and Bob Melvin and I. You know, Jace Tingler's like, I'm in on all this. If this is going to help us win, okay, I'm good with it. And, you know, whether it was Al Davis running the Raiders, you know, Jace and company in San Diego, I think that's what bothers the Dodgers as much as anything, is we've got all the great players, and, you know, we got the guys that are built by Planet Fitness and look great, and they brush their hair and their teeth are all white. And here come these Padres, and we got a challenge. We got a problem here.
We started hearing back in March about the possibility of a single site World Series, you know, playoffs that were going to be held in one spot because they wanted to reduce the chances for exposure to coronavirus infection. So the details that were released yesterday, none of that, I think, was a surprise. The thing that jumped out at me, and just looking at the potential schedule, Carl, I love the fact that this year's playoffs is going to more closely mirror what we see in the regular season. You know, they play day after day after day after day, consecutive days, as opposed to having off days built in, where, you know, teams are resting their bullpens on that on the two travel days within a 7-game series. I love that. I'm excited about that. And the depth of pitching staffs is going to be tested.
I'm excited about that. I mean, I know that, you know, one of the things, because we read so much, you know, you read about the Yankees in particular, but other teams are going to be affected by it. The quarantine for the final week of the regular season. And if you finish, you know, in the 6th, 7th, 8th spot, and you're traveling all over the place, you're literally away from home, you know, for a month. And that's your bubble. You do get into the whole bubble thing, but it actually starts even earlier. It's not just the playoffs. It's the last week of the regular season. And, you know, the point that I made about Jansen, and maybe it's Bueller or Kershaw that walk out of that bullpen door to close a game, or anyone else on that pitching staff, this does force you to really manage a little bit more. You're not going to have those guys rested in between without those off days. The horse is dead, but I keep stepping on it. The urgency that this particular postseason will create is unlike any other. We don't have day off. We're going to have games every day because we're in cities where weather is not going to be a factor, let alone a roof over a building. So everything changes. I mean, this has obviously been a year in which everything's changed, but everything changes in the postseason because of we're not going to have rain delays. We're not going to have rain outs, and we are going to be required to use guys every single day. There's going to be injuries that you're not used to dealing with because of the back-to-back-to-back games. There's going to be pitchers who are not going to be available. Whether you use a pitcher on Tuesday when you know you still have games on Wednesday and Thursday, all these things are different, and goes back to what I know I've said on this podcast, and I know you've echoed. This is going to be as memorable a postseason and season as we've ever had, and I still think that's going to bear out.
And I don't think that we talked to touch a little bit about this on this yesterday. I don't think seeding really matters that much. Like, I think it does matter to the Padres because they're up and coming and they would love to break the Dodgers' streak of winning the National League West. And that would give them some extra dollop of confidence going into the postseason. But generally speaking, it doesn't matter the seeding. If you're the eighth seed, you're the Cleveland Indians, you're traveling to play a number one seed, but there's not any real home field advantage. And as this same executive said to me yesterday, you don't want to face Shane Bieber in the first round. It doesn't matter where the Indians are seeded. And I kind of like that, Carl. Like, it really doesn't matter. All of these teams, you're not going to have any buys. They're all going to be faced with best out of three and then best out of five and make the best of what they can.
Yeah. And I think, the executive is right about Bieber, but the executive, I'm sure you could point to literally almost every team.
Yep.
You don't really want to face Clevinger in game one. You just don't really want to face Garrett Cole. In spite of the fact that he struggled, you just don't want to. You may not want to face Zach Wheeler. I mean, there's a name on virtually every team, if not two names, you don't want to face. And especially with the teams that are going to be the lower seeds, because, in a best of three with no home field advantage, you lose game one, and it is a lot tighter than it's ever been, except when there was a wild card game, and if you lost game one, you were out. But this year presents all sorts of fascinating possibilities, and road teams, I agree with you, especially with an ace, can make life miserable. Just imagine Bieber goes out and wins game one and gives you seven innings. And then in game two, this becomes the all hands on deck approach for the team that won the game, let alone the team that lost the game. Because if we can get this thing done in two games, that's all we care about. Game two, in for both teams, usually, game two is kind of a swing game and a best of seven. You don't want to go down two zip. Obviously now game two is the most important game in the series. You're either 1-1 or you're gone. And that's so great because game one has an added magnitude to it. I think it's going to be as fascinating and exciting a postseason as we've ever had.
Yeah. Imagine if the White Sox are the number one seed, win the American League Central, best record in the American League, and the number eight seed as of today. I'm sure this is, okay. I think this is right. Well, actually, no, it would be Houston would be the eight. But no, Houston would be because they're going to finish second. But Cleveland would be the eighth seed. Toronto would be the seventh seed. And so you'd have to face Shane Bieber in game one of the playoffs if you're the White Sox. And you're right. You get in a one-hole right away. According to the New York Times.
But you beat Shane Bieber. Buster, you beat Shane Bieber.
Right.
And you're up one zip. And they don't have Shane Bieber tomorrow. Boy, that's a great feeling in game two. Let's end this thing right now. Let's not even think about game three. Every arm's available. We'll bring a starter out again in the eighth inning that we weren't planning on using in game three. We got to end this thing now. That's what can happen on the other side of that.
Yeah, it's a College World Series all over again at the end of it. According to the New York Times, Derek Jeter's Tampa house is up for sale. Apparently the sale price is $29 million. This is a place as big as a Best Buy. What do you think, Carl?
Yeah, I think Steve Cohen should buy it too. I think given that he's now, he bought the Mets, he should go buy Jeter's place down there. He should tell Cashman he can live there. He's going to pay for him to live there, and he's going to be the guy that runs the entire organization. That and the fact that it's $29 million takes you and I out of that. So I just hope somebody like Steve buys that.
I was amazed yesterday when I tweeted that out. Everyone's chiming. What's going to happen with Tom Brady? Wait, isn't Tom Brady living in that house? You know, where's he going to go? Is he got to look for a new place? Everyone was very concerned about the Buccaneers' new quarterback. All right, Carl, thanks for doing this.
You got it. See you, Buster.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, your Mets fandom has been well established on this podcast. So as Steve Cohen comes in as the Mets' new owner, what advice would you give him in terms of what he needs to do right off the bat?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it seems like, you know, the expectation is that, you know, some money will be spent perhaps differently than it has been in the past. Obviously, the biggest, you know, free agent out there, unless the Phillies were to find a way to get an extension done in the last few weeks here, is JT Realmuto, although he's hurt right now. So it seems like that would be, you know, the biggest free agent target. I know we talked about back in, like, what was it, March or something, or even earlier, about Mookie Betts, obviously before he signed that extension with the Dodgers. But I think that anyone who logs onto Twitter for a moment and looks at the Mets and what the Mets fans seem to say, definitely would see that a desire to spend is certainly what those fans seem to be looking for.
Carl Ravitch's idea for Steve Cohen's first big investment would be to call Brian Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees, and do what he could to lure someone who's been in working in New York as a GM for 23 years. What do you think?
Oh, wow. That would be, I mean, here I am suggesting JT Realmuto, and Carl has a much bigger splash idea there. That would certainly be something. And I definitely think that, you know, we'll see what happens with the GM position there. But that would be, I mean, that would be definitely atop the list of the Mets splashes that they could make at any point, probably in their history.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 20. So speaking of Brian Cashman's Yankees, they won 20-6 last night. It was the first time they'd scored 20 or more runs since August of 2015, when they scored 20 runs in a game at the Braves in Atlanta. And the last time they scored 20 or more at home was August 25th, 2011, against the A's, when they scored 22. It was the first time that they got five or more RBI from the first and second spot in their order from DJ LeMahieu and Luke Voit. And Luke Voit is now leading the majors in home runs with 18. The last Yankee to lead the majors in home runs was Alex Rodriguez in 2007. And DJ LeMahieu's eighth inning home run came off a position player. Now, we see this maybe a little less this year than we've seen in the past, but we certainly see these kinds of things happen. So this really surprised me that it set this sort of record. So that was a pitch from Santiago Espinal, a position player on the Blue Jays, that was at 48.7 mile an hour pitch. That's the slowest pitch hit for a home run in the pitch tracking era, which is since 2008. 48.7 mile an hour pitch, 100.5 mile an hour exit velocity. And if you saw it, it was something else, that home run.
Number two.
Number two is 18. So speaking of high scoring games, the Brewers scored 18 runs last night against the Cardinals, 4 days after they got no hit by Alec Mills. So in their last seven games, the Brewers have won 19-0 over the Tigers on September 9th, got no hit on Sunday on September 13th by Alec Mills, and then they scored 18 last night. So according to Elias, they're the first team in MLB history to score 18 or more runs twice and be no hit in a seven game span. And yeah, that feels pretty specific, but what kind of offense does that? I mean, it's just fascinating to me. And it feels like these high scoring games are piling up. Obviously, I just talked about two. So there have been six games this season where a team scored at least 18 runs. There were 16 last year, you know, pace, 60-game season, all of that. But there were just seven such games in 2017 when we set the all-time home run record prior to what happened last year. So I think that's pretty interesting, you know, already one away from that.
Number one.
Number one is 100. So Jacob deGrom is pitching tonight, and he's been hitting 100 miles an hour on the radar gun a lot this year. So he's thrown 15 pitches that were at least 100.0 miles an hour. He had two in his career entering 2020, and they were both in 2019. And he has three strikeouts on those pitches at 100.0 miles an hour, which is tied with Sixto Sanchez for the most amongst starters. All other starters have combined for 200-mile-an-hour strikeouts, jeez, one from Tyler Glasnow and one from Denelson Lamet. I mean, it's just crazy. We're talking about a guy who was already a late bloomer, late start, and he's gaining all of this velocity later in his career. He's averaging 98.5 miles an hour on his four-seamer, which leads all pitchers who've thrown at least 150 four-seamers. So that's including Aroldis Chapman. It's including every reliever you can think of, and Jacob deGrom is at the top of that list.
So I'm going to put you in a position again to be giving some advice. Trevor Bauer in the past has talked about going year to year with contracts in his career to maximize the given leverage that he builds up in a year. He could theoretically go into free agency looking to set a one-year record for free agency, but he also could be in a position to take advantage of an interest on a multi-year deal from a team like the Mets. What advice would you give him?
I mean, he's having an absolutely outstanding year. I mean, DeGrom is getting all of the attention, and rightfully so, because he could win his third straight Cy Young. But Yu Darvish and Trevor Bauer are right there with him in terms of just being absolutely outstanding in the National League. If it were me, I would certainly want to take advantage of that momentum and try to leverage a multi-year deal. We know that, you know, that multi-year deal may look a little different than it would have last winter because of everything going on in the world. And so many different financial considerations for teams this year. But it's hard to think that he'll have a better year than this one. And that's not a lack of belief in him whatsoever. It's just that it's really hard to have an ERA lower than 1.71 and just be doing what he's doing. So I certainly think that if a team were to come knocking with a multi-year deal, that would be the way to go. But, you know, you gotta stick to your beliefs. And if that's one of his strong ones, and he certainly talked about that in the past, then, you know, more power to him.
You're right. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, PK Steinberg writes in, dudes, what will the Yankees do when Judge returns? Send down Frazier, bench Gardner. Tough call in their outfield, no?
Yeah, PK, I think it just comes down to who's swinging well, right? If Clint Frazier's swinging well and doing damage, then he's going to stay in the lineup. If Gardy gets hot all of a sudden, maybe, you know, he's the guy. I really think we've reached that stage of the season for the Yankees. They're just going to go with a hot hand. While they bring back Stanton and Judge in a measured way, Aaron Boone talked about that with reporters yesterday, that while Stanton is back, they are going to work in some rest so they don't stress his body too much.
Last one for today, Jessica Schuler at Jessica B. Schuler writes in, how about some love for the O's Ryan Mountcastle as Rookie of the Year? He's batting 364 with a 1.036 OPS and 18 RBIs in 22 games, or was the August 21st call-up a little too late? I think that it was, Jessica. What do you think, Buster?
Yeah, Taylor, I love the fact you're jumping on the Orioles bleacher tweet. I mean, anytime there's an Orioles bleacher tweet, it is in the podcast, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Got to get the shine in. I mean, we're not talking about them on the field for the, you know, the next couple weeks, so got to sneak it in there.
Well, if you look at wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs, the leaders are Kyle Lewis of the Mariners, who's had a tremendous rookie season. Luis Robert of the White Sox, they're both at 1.8. Matt Castle is at 0.9. The best pitcher in terms of impact as a rookie, James Karinchak of the Indians, who Terry Francona, we had the Indians on Sunday Night Baseball one night, and Tito texted me, Gronk. That's who he looks like when, you know, physically he's so big. But I'd guess it's probably going to be Luis Robert 1, Kyle Lewis 2 at this point. We'll see.
Got it. Mountcastle coming in would be big boon to this Mike Elias rebuild experiment if he can keep this up. Only a couple games in, but I like where your head's at, Jessica. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. If you have yet to already, we would very much appreciate it.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl, to Sarah, to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everybody. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.